Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Has come up with so many big saves in this campaign.
Gets plenty behind it, Giroud. What a stop, what a right hand that is from Kasper Schmeichel.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew.
Richard.
This is a big one today.
It's huge. It's massive, mate. We've gone with the big dogs. We got the big guns. We have a man whose name is entrenched in goalkeeping greatness.
It is indeed very, very true. And this for me, and I don't want to build this up too much because I know that so many people have messaged me about this particular interview, and I'm sure you're excited enough about to listen to this, but he doesn't disappoint at all. Like, in terms of the information that he's giving, for me, I mean, I wish I'd have heard this myself when I was a 15-year-old goalkeeper, because some really interesting points he's made and how he got to where he is and what he's done in order to maximise who he is. Yeah, fascinating interview.
Not even a 15-year-old goalkeeper as well, though, I think, as an adult goalkeeper as well.
Absolutely. No, I think, you know, we'll touch on a couple of the bits that he talks about during this interview. And there's one bit in particular that stuck with me since, which is in regards to having your own board of directors effectively. And we discussed this idea. I mentioned that it was something that I did. And he very much does this in a big, big way, where he has his trusted advisors, I'd say, whether that's a goalkeeper coach, family, friends, whoever it might be. But effectively, they are his inner circle. And anybody outside that, he doesn't necessarily take their opinions on board. It's those that are around him, those that he really trusts, that he'll do that with. And there's other bits as well. He touches on a lot how he's taken elements from other businesses, other sports, other ideas, again, in order to maximise what he's able to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good listen, this one. Worth saying again that we veered slightly left field. Mm-hmm. So we haven't really spoken about his career. We haven't spoken about the Premier League title win, playing in the Champions League, playing the Premier League as things stand at the moment, playing for Denmark, World Cup, European Championships, all that stuff. We haven't actually spoken about that, because rather than journey through his career, we thought we'd utilise the time just to pick his brain a bit.
It was exactly that. I just wanted to delve into his psyche. Ultimately, he has, for me, you know, you look at how he came through when he was younger, playing for Notts County, etc., going on various loans, and of course now having played as many games as he has for Leicester. But I think for me, he's the type of goalkeeper that so many young goalkeepers can look at. And if you can take an element of what it is that Kasper Schmeichel can give you, you have to take it.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This week's guest is a goalkeeper who needs no introduction. He started at Manchester City. He matured first in loan spells and then permanently at Notts County. He established himself at Leeds and then bossed it at Leicester. He's number one for club and country. He's a Premier League title winner. And the day before recording this podcast, he racked up his 400th appearance for the Foxes. Kasper Schmeichel, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the kind introduction.
Not a problem at all.
Great stuff. Right, we're going to start off with the quick fire questions we do with every feature podcast. The first of which is, which brand of gloves do you currently wear?
Currently, Adidas gloves at the moment.
Okay, the second of which, what's the favourite kit that you've ever worn, goalkeeping kit that you've ever worn?
That's a good question. I really like the kit I have for Denmark, the all-black kit. I like that. For Leicester, probably... I like the one we had last season, and the all-black one as well. But To be fair, I like the green one that we're wearing this season. So, yeah, quite a few.
I do love the Danish one. The black one that you mentioned, that is really nice. The final of the three questions to get us started is, what's your favourite ever save? Not necessarily the one that everybody talks about, but for you, your favourite save.
Oh, wow. That's a difficult one. I don't know. I think when it comes to saves, I always think of the importance of them. But if you're talking like just favorite saves, I had one when I was a youngster. I was playing in, I think it was the under 19s or something for Man City. We were playing Newcastle away, and it was a bit like, no, I'm not going to compare myself to Gordon Banks, but it was in that mold coming across my box, and the ball headed downwards and kind of was managed to, you know, it bounced in front of me and I tipped it over. That's probably, yeah, I don't know. That one just kind of sticks in my head always.
Nice. I like it. It's going to be a difficult one to find though, that, isn't it? Normally when a goalkeeper talks about his saves, we try and put it on Twitter. Don't think I'm going to find that one.
I don't think you're going to find that one. Definitely not.
Well, it's great to have you on, Casper. The general flow of the podcast is to often look at a goalkeeper's career, delve a bit into the mindset, and perhaps pull out a few interesting stories from years gone by. But I am under strict instructions from my cohort here, who has let me know in no uncertain terms that he just wants to talk goalkeeping with your fine self. So, Richard, that is what we're going to do.
Yeah, well, I'm right in thinking, I know we touched on this briefly the other day, you're a bit of a goalkeeping geek at heart. Is that fair?
I would say that's fair, yeah.
Yeah, so this, I was just thinking, we've now got a bit of time, and I'm thinking, if I'm a young kid and we're listening to this podcast now, and I'm a 12-year-old Richard Lee, what would I want to be hearing? So, if, you know, effectively, I just want to delve into your mind. I want to understand what makes you tick. I mentioned we spoke off air the other day, and we did play against each other once, which I've already told Matt all about, and the fact that I think it was a last minute equaliser, wasn't it, Joby McEnough?
It was, unfortunately.
Do you know what though? I remember something that you probably don't remember about that day, but I do. Was your warm up was?
Yeah.
I remember you spent about half an hour, it felt like, just kicking, and there were balls landing on the edge of our box. Do you still do that now? As much kicking in the warm up?
No. No, not anymore.
What was the thinking behind that? Because it was so unusual to me. Because I've always had a real kind of steady warm up, do half a dozen kicks at the end. But I just remember coming out, and it was almost at the start of the warm up. You were just booming balls one after the other.
I always do it at the start one because mostly it was safety. You know, because you know you're launching balls into the opposition box and. Or into the opposition half, and no one can really, you know, they're concentrating on their own warm up. So I kind of don't want to be landing it on their head. And the other kind of thing was to make sure that the opposition goalkeepers in opposition knew how far the ball was going to be coming for them. You know, which meant that would, every time the ball came to my feet or I had the ball, they were aware that there was a threat in behind, so they'd drop off a bit more.
That's interesting. Do you know what? Sorry to butt in, but the exact thing I said to Matt before we started this recording was that was exactly where my head was at. I'm coming out and you're hitting these balls and they're landing on the edge of the box. So I'm just thinking, oh, it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be one of those days. So actually, the fact that you actually consciously thought about that, the safety thing, actually, I never thought, because, you know, the amount of times I'll be doing a warm-up and you shank a kick and it ends up, going right in the middle of a possession drill for the opposition and you're all screaming over. That's an interesting point. But the other point you made, no, genuinely on the day, I remember thinking that. And if anything, of course, that's going to change the dynamic of the game. They are going to drop off that little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, and again, that really goes down to, you know, it's a while ago that, and the game has changed. You know, you don't really tend to kick like that anymore. You know, you're more passing out from the back. But back then, every time the keeper got the ball in his hands, it was going long. So like I say, it was kind of to to drop it in their heads about this. This could be coming quite far, so that they'd drop off and give us some more space.
Yeah, and you had from memory, it was the half volley you used to use back then, wasn't it? During the that period of time during the Cardiff. And in fairness, out of two teams, again from memory, was we were very direct, incredibly direct on Watford.
Yes,
team back
you
then.
Were.
Yeah, you probably remember yes, that quite were. Well.
I remember that.
You guys, nowhere near as direct as us, because I think we were like, if there was a throw in anywhere in the pitch, we were loading the box and trying to.
Oh yes.
Yeah, which was must have been fun to play against, I'm sure.
I loved it.
Yeah, but did you find that the teams that you've kind of been in? We mentioned Notts County briefly. But that if anything, obviously, the further into your career, of course, the less you've kicked it. And now you're in a team that, of course, plays a lot of football and requires you to be very, very good with your feet.
Yeah, I mean, football's changed. You know, I signed my first contract, I think it was in 2003, 2004. So, you know, showing my age, it's a long time ago. And I was thrust in early doors at the age of, you know, just turned 15. I was training with Man City's first team, and the game was very, very different back then. You know, you spent very little time in passing out, and goalkeepers were required. You know, different things were required. So back then, you know, I was at a massive disadvantage in one sense of the first thing everyone looked at was height. So, you know, you had to be 6'4", 6'5" to be a keeper in people's opinion. And then, but my advantage was I could launch the ball, which was the other thing people looked at. How far can you kick? Because that was the kind of football that was played. So that was how I kind of tried to stand out back then, was how far I could actually kick it. But then, you know, football changes and you have to evolve. I was very, very lucky in the sense that when I got into like the Denmark youth teams, you know, we passed and we played. So it was something I did from the start. And there was always put a lot of emphasis on playing with the outfielders. I was an outfielder till I was 13, 14. So playing with the outfielders was really, really important for my own game, but also like for the sense that the outfielders could understand that they could trust me with the ball at my feet. You know, they knew they could give the ball to me and I could do anything that they could do. You know, I could control the ball in the same way they could. So the game has evolved massively, but I had such a good footballing education going around the leagues, playing in all the different leagues, playing in so many different teams with so many different styles that it's made me more versatile you know, it helps when you're coming to a new manager or a new club that they know that you can adapt.
And I guess that's it. If you've got all the clubs in the bag, then of course you can adapt to any different style of play and makes you the type of goalkeeper that would be very, very much wanted. Just something you touched on there. If you don't mind me asking, what is your exact height?
189.
So that's what, 6'2.5", so that's, I want to say.
I'm not exactly sure in feet, but in centimeters, it's 189. I think it's 6'1". I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, because this is another interesting point for me, because I know you just touched it there. You're not 6'4", 6'5". Do you have any thoughts on that in terms, because again, the amount of young goalkeepers that will be listening to this, and it's one of the questions, the first questions I get asked is about height and how important it is, whether it matters. For me, I've got my opinions in terms of, I appreciate if you are very, very small, there are going to be certain situations that are going to be that little bit more difficult. But then similarly, if you're very, very tall, there are also going to be certain situations that are quite difficult for other reasons. Like, what are your thoughts when it comes to the height of a goalkeeper?
Yeah, again, I think it's something that's evolved and changed over the years. You look at the way football was played and the coaches that have been around, they played in an era where, you know, it was lots of crosses where you expected your goalkeeper to come out and be commanding and things like that. And you don't really see that anymore. Probably, I'd say Neuer's probably the last of the, and maybe Courtois, of the, you know, the goalkeepers who dominate the aerial field of their box. But I always looked at people, you know, similar build to myself. So my guys were Iker Casillas, was Cañizares, and Oliver Kahn. You know, they were probably bigger. Oh, sorry, they were probably bigger than people thought smaller than people thought because of their personality. You know, I was really surprised. I played a preseason friendly against Valencia against Cañizares, and I've actually got a picture with him. And and I'm a good, probably a good, probably 8-10 centimeters bigger than him. But I always had this image of him. But that was obviously his charisma, his personality, that made. And the same with Oliver Kahn. You know, they had this this aura about them that made them feel, you know, like these giants. And that was something that I really, you know, tried to model my game on, was to have the character and the personality to make you know make yourself big in the opposition's mind, so they knew who they were coming up against. They weren't just coming up against any other goalkeeper. They were coming up against me, and that was kind of what I model it on. So the height thing is changing as well, because it's different things that are required from goalkeepers now. Now, you know, you look at goalkeepers that are being scouted, and they're being scouted for their ability with the ball at their feet, probably more than with their hands. But you know, it changes and it varies compared to whatever team you're playing in and whatever that coach at that time wants.
I know you were kind of half joking when Rich alluded to the fact that Watford were quite direct in that game that you were playing for Cardiff, but you said, you know, you loved it. Did you actually love it? Because was that part of your education? Yeah, well, part of your education, right? There you go.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Loved the fight, loved the scrap. It's brilliant. I mean, like I say, you don't really get those games anymore. But when you do come up against them sometimes, you know, probably Stoke was the last real one that was, you know, where you really had that physical fight. But yeah, I enjoyed it. And particularly at that age, it was so important for me to be able to learn from those kind of experiences, and to be able to deal with that, because you know you had big players, big strikers, big centre halves coming in on you and trying to physically hurt you, because there was no VAR back then. There was probably maybe two cameras at a game at that level. And I always go back to my professional debut for Darlington. Probably about a minute into the game, we were playing Peterborough, and they got a wide free kick. And Ben Futcher, I don't know if you remember him, very big, probably 6'6", 6'7", centre half. He let the cross come in swinging. I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, you know, 17, 18-year-old keeper, here we go. Let's see what he's made of. And the ball come in, I've come out and punched it, and I got absolutely cleaned out by this big centre half. And it was one of them. I knew it was going to come at some point, but it was what I went out to play senior football for, was to learn from these things. And I always was taught, you know, don't ever let anyone show you, you know, that, or don't ever show anyone that they've hurt you. And he didn't hurt me, but it was getting up straight away and said, right, I'm ready for this. I want more. Come on, let's have it. And that was a great experience 1 minute into your debut to kind of just right end up in the back of your own net. But the punch was successful and I got a free kick for it. But, you know, I learned something from that, right? Get your elbows up, get your knees up.
Yeah, massive. In terms of that, do you miss that at all? You mentioned that football's changed a lot. And certainly when I watch goalkeepers now, certainly at the top level, you could argue that their game is, it's incredibly different from what it would have been 15 years ago. You know, and especially even your game will have developed so much, and credit to you, because you've seen certain goalkeepers where even 10 years ago were fantastic and very much top of their game. But with the transition and the way in which goalkeepers are playing now, some have found that transition a little bit more difficult. Yet you're someone who, I'm guessing when you were younger, would have been brought up, you know, I remember I was brought up in the back pass when he came in when I was 12 or so. Now, obviously, it wouldn't have necessarily been an issue for you growing up. But still, even when I was reasonably young playing at Watford, we weren't really working on distribution that much even then. It was only felt like maybe 10 years after the back pass rule came in that goalkeepers were really working on their feet. So have you found that difficult at all, given how much football has changed during your time in the game?
No, I haven't found it difficult. I was lucky in the sense that I knew, for example, my father, he never really trained with the goalkeepers. He always trained with the outfielders, you know, because he'd always been taught that you need to be able to play with your feet and all these kind of things. And I kind of did that as well. And then obviously different things come around at different times. And like I say, I was lucky that when I went back with the national team, that something completely different was required of you. So that was ingrained into me from that side as well. And then different aspects of the game evolved. So I started my professional career, you know, with my dad was the senior keeper at Man City. We had Tim Flowers, Carlo Nash, and you know, Nicky Weaver. The youngsters were me and Kieran Westwood. You know, so a lot of good keepers there that to learn from. You know, someone like Tim Flowers, who then became the coach after he retired. He became my coach. You know, he had a great kind of drive to teach me, and then obviously Hartie came in as well, and me and Joe were similar age, and we were very similar, you know, in our love of the game and our willingness to work. And we spent so much time practicing all aspects of the game, but particularly, you know, afternoons getting, you know, two bags of balls and just launching balls to each other for hours on end. And then we had Ronald Waterhouse, a Dutch goalkeeper, come along, and in his first session he did a sidewinder, and I'd never actually seen it up close, and that was like a, you know, it was one of those moments like, well, hang on, do that again. Just do that again. What was that? Because we were doing volleys to each other and he sidewinded it. I thought, whoa, show me that. And then from there on, it was just like looking at him, how he could do it. And he could do it left and right foot. He was incredible. And then it was a case of copying him, you know, watching the videos of him and just thinking, right, I need to learn this. I have to learn this. This is such a weapon. And again, it's lucky that you meet someone and you're able to see them up close, and you know, they can give you feedback and give you advice, and you can copy them. And that was one of the big kind of changes in my game was bringing the sidewinder in.
Well, do you know what? And I want to, this is going to lead me on nicely to another aspect that I really want to get into detail on with yourself about. Obviously, the environment will play a part. If you've got the right environment and you are someone who's willing to learn and always wants to learn, then of course you're going to give yourself the best chance of maximizing whatever it is that you have. And, you know, certainly me just watching you from afar as an observer, one of the biggest compliments I can give you is in regards to your mindset. You know, you seem so resilient. You know, you don't make many errors, but when you do make an error, it's very rarely followed up with another error. You know, you seem to bounce back incredibly quickly. Is that something you've ever done work on, or is that just simply a case of learning from people around you and just learning from your own mistakes?
It is. It definitely is. And you know, I've said it many times already. You know, I can't stress how lucky I've been in my career to have worked with some of the keepers that I've worked with and seen their kind of attitudes to it. You know, I obviously saw my dad very closely and how he dealt with success and adversity, because they're both being different challenges. Then going on to David Seaman, seeing how calm he was, how kind of unaffected he was mentally by any kind of error or any kind of slip up. And then, you know, to David James, to Joe Hart, to Shay Given, to Ronald, you know, so I can name so many keepers, you know, that have all had incredible careers and all so different and all dealt differently with adversity. But for me, that the whole thing comes down to, you're going to make mistakes. So don't be worried. Don't be scared of them. The mistakes are what you learn from, you know. So you make a mistake, you know not to do that again. You know, it's quite simple. And you don't go out to make mistakes, but they're going to happen. You look at outfielders, they make loads of mistakes during games, but they just don't get highlighted because you're the only one in a position where you have the ultimate responsibility. It annoys me the kind of, the, you know, the thing that the outfielders always say goalkeepers are crazy, because, yeah, actually we are crazy, but the reason we're crazy is because we're the only ones who dare to take that kind of responsibility on board, because you as a keeper, you can't make mistakes, but you're only human, so you will. For me, the whole mindset of goalkeeping, I've calmed down a lot over the years, and yeah, there's always a chance to put it right. If you make a mistake, move on. Don't come looking for work. Don't be looking to impress. That's always been something that's really been important to me during games, is my best games are the ones where I'm not noticed. you know, where nobody notices me. That's the best goalkeepers for me are the ones who just do their job and you don't notice them, because they are just solid all the way through. And that's always been my goal. It's not been the ones who make flashy saves or do this, that, and the other. It's about just doing your job and your team trusting you, your manager trusting you, and they know what you're going to do. They're not looking over their shoulder. You know, the centre halves aren't looking over their shoulders thinking, right, what's he going to do now? Is he going to come tearing out? Is he going to stay in? And all this kind of thing. So just being very clear, very concise in what you're going to do and how you're going to do it, so that, that there's a lot of clarity within the team. And the ultimate thing with goalkeepers is trust.
Calmness again. There's that word that keeps cropping up, doesn't it, Rich? Every time we speak to a goalkeeper, they say that, you know, more often than not, when they were younger, they had a temper or they had this anger that they just felt like they needed to release. And over time, they've managed to balance that line between calmness and aggression. And you've just used it there again. You said, you know, over your time as a goalkeeper, you became more calm.
It's still there, trust me. It still bubbles under the surface, but there's ways of containing it. And as you get older and you study the game more, you study communication, you study leadership, psychology, all these kind of things, you also learn that you need how do I explain it? You need to be able to convey it to your teammates that you are in control. It's the same in training, when some of the youngsters, if they do something and they get annoyed with themselves, I always say to them, just style it out. I don't know what you're trying to do. Just make it look as if that's exactly what you tried to do. Do you know what I mean? Don't let anyone else know that you think you've made a mistake. You know inside yourself, we don't need to know that, because that gives people an opportunity to doubt you. You know, you say, he is right. He did make a mistake there. Don't give him that opportunity. Just, you know, deal with it in your head. Yeah, it was a mistake. That wasn't what I was trying to do. But onto the outside world, look as if that's exactly what I was trying to do. I was in control.
Do you know what? So it fascinates me, because you've broken this down there, and I agree with everything you've just said there. But look, is this just purely from the experiences you've had within the game? Or you did touch on the fact there that you'd study communication, or you'd study other parts of it, the tactical side of the game. Do you genuinely mean study? As in, you know, would you work with psychologists? Would you work with...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. I've worked with military people on communication and leadership. I've worked with psychologists. I've worked with people in so many different sports, different ways of life, CEOs of companies. Because, you know, I kind of see the role as a goalkeeper as that if you're the CEO of a company, for example, you're in charge, but you have to function within a team. But you, as a goalkeeper, you're part of a team, but you wear a different kit. You train differently, you know, so you kind of have to marry the two together. So you have to take charge of your career as a goalkeeper, because there's no one there to bail you out. You're the one that's in sole charge of your career, so you have to take responsibility. And for me, goalkeeping, I spent hours and hours and hours watching goalkeeping, watching other goalkeepers, watching my own performances, watching all these performances from keepers around the world, seeing, is there something I can learn? Is there somewhere I can get better? Is there a little percentage, something someone else does that I might be able to add into my game? And that's where your goalkeeping colleagues, the people you confide in, the people you talk to and whose opinions you value, that's when you speak to them. You say, listen, I saw this guy do this. I think I want to try that. I'm going to be trying that in training for a bit. And test things out, see if they work for you, because you can always get better. And, you know, for me, going into every session, there's always a goal to the session. The goal is always to get better, always to improve. You know, don't waste any sessions. Don't waste time. You never know how long or short your career is going to be. So, you know, appreciate the times, enjoy the times and keep learning, always keep progressing. That's kind of how the only way I keep my desire and hunger is to have that feeling of constantly learning, constantly evolving.
Yeah, love it. There's a word that I stumbled across when I was younger, and it meant so much that I actually had it tattooed on me, but it's the word Kaizen, which is continual.
Kaizen,
K-A-I-Z-E-N. Yeah, if you look that up, it's continual never-ending improvement is effectively what it means, but there's not a single word in the English language that can sum up what that word means. So it's a Japanese word, I think it is. But you know what? That mentality of exactly that. Every day there's another step, there's another move forward, and it's always a process. And this is, even now, I mean, I still speak to a psychologist every week, more for my education now than anything else, because again, this isn't just football, by the way, this is everything, is that if you're focused on the process as opposed to being too attached to the result, then of course you can keep growing. You know, and I give the example that you're 1-0 up in a game, 10 minutes to go. Now, does that then change your state at all? You know, or do you still maintain the same state, your optimum performance state that you would have at any other time of the game? Now, for me, the very best goalkeepers are the ones that are calm in that moment. And they carry on doing the same things regardless whether you're 1-0 up in the last 10 minutes or whether, you know, you're 5-0 up in the first 10 minutes. It doesn't matter. Like, you are still in that same game state, so that in the biggest moments, you've got that calmness of mind to make that big save if the opportunity comes up to make that big save towards the end. I mean, is this, you know, I'm saying these things here. You mentioned the education that you have. Is it these kind of things that you would touch on?
Most definitely. I tend to look at other sports a lot. So the one position or sport I always look at is the quarterback in the NFL. You know, they doesn't matter what time of the game, what's at stake, they have to make the right decision. And someone like, I love watching Tom Brady. I used to love watching Peyton Manning and these guys. One was their preparation, you know, their muscle memory. They trusted their process. They trusted their ability so much that when that moment arrived where the game was on the line, they were so in control and so calm because they'd done it so many times before that there was no reason to rush it. There was no reason to panic. There was no reason to be nervous or anything like that, because they knew they'd done it that many times. They knew that they had the ability. And the other one is tennis. You know, tennis has a lot of similar movements to goalkeeping, and the mentality of being a team player in basically what is a single sport, because goalkeeping is a different sport within the sport. You know, it there's only one of you in the team that can play, and it's so different to what all the others do. Like I say, you wear a different kit. So you have to also have, along with the team mentality sport, you have to have an individual mentality sport, because in individual sports, you are solely responsible for your performance. You can't blame anything or anyone else if you don't perform. And as a goalkeeper, you have to do your homework, and your homework is many, many things. You know, your homework is obviously your study and, you know, all these kind of things, but you have to do your mental preparation. You have to do your physical training, your stuff in the gym, but then you have to do your stuff out on the pitch. And the stuff out on the pitch is, yeah, that's the bread and butter. And you get to a point where you can do it in your sleep. Practically, you can catch volleys, half volleys, all these kind of things in your sleep, but you have to keep doing them because of that muscle memory. So it just becomes completely natural when it comes to game time. You know, you don't have to think about it. It's just completely instinctive. And as a youngster, I used to stand and just volley a ball up against the wall and catch it and keep doing that over and over and over and over again. You know, hundreds of thousands of times through my career, and still do. And whether I'm sitting on the couch watching TV, I've got a tennis ball in my hand, you know, you're working your coordination, left, right hand, you know, all these kind of little things that will help you when the time comes. And they're so, so important. And for me, I've always wanted to be over-prepared. And I would hate if something kind of happened in the game and I could look and I had to look at myself and say, you didn't prepare for that, or you didn't do that well enough, or something like that. Yeah, that's where I kind of always tried to outwork every other keeper or outwork any other teammate to make sure that when I was put in that position, I was ready.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional grade products and next day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
you someone that would set goals at the start of the week for what you want to achieve in the coming week in terms of the gym sessions that you do, in terms of, you mentioned it sounds like you're trying to make the most of every second of the day where possible. Yeah, you know, you gave that example there of just sort of playing with a tennis ball in your spare time, whatever it might be, just to be doing something. Are you somebody that will kind of set out plans in terms of what you can do process-wise during a week?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we'll, you know, that we'll do with like the fitness coach and stuff like, because it that so much depends on what's required from you that week in training. You can't always plan that yourself. You need the coaches to be a part of that. So if you have a session where you know you're going to be required heavily in the session outside, you're not going to go and do loads of, you know, heavy leg weights and be leggy and you know, heavy in the actual session. So yeah, the planning's there. It's not something that I tend to get too involved in. It's something that the fitness coaches will plan. But in terms of the actual goal setting, that's obviously something that we'll do, and they'll set out the process and guide me through that process. It's their area of expertise.
How important as well is it, Casper and Rich, you said there about maximizing literally every minute of the day that you have free to develop yourself, but how important is it as well to actually switch off, to stop from time to time? Do you do that? Do you sit down? Do you kick back? Do you ever think of anything other than your performance and football?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. And that's, again, something that's developed over time. You know, when I was younger, I used to watch every football game available to me. I used to watch match of the day. I used to watch everything. But I just can't do it anymore. Football can very quickly become too much. And with the development of social media and things like that, you know, you're constantly being evaluated, you're constantly being scrutinized, criticized, and by people who rightly or wrongly have no education in what you're actually doing or what you're actually trying to achieve. So if you constantly look for this or seek this approval from the outside world of what you're doing is all right, you go crazy. And like I say, as a youngster, you used to do that. I used to do that. I used to watch everything. I used to, you know, get frustrated by a comment about you or something like that. And now you've just got to switch off and not take notice, not listen, and find other interests. And not, as you get older, you know, you have kids and that kind of takes over your life. And it's for a footballer, for me at least, it's the biggest blessing I could have had, you know, because they don't care if you've played well or if you've played terribly when you come home. You know, when you come home, you have a responsibility to them to be their dad. And that makes you switch off a lot quicker because, you know, you know something's required of you other than football. And that's been great for me. And it also gives you a different perspective on life. And you also realize that football is important, but there are more important things. And yeah, different experiences through life. I have my goalkeeper coach for Denmark who I've basically known my entire life. You know, I went to school with his son and I've holidayed with him and his family and you know, been very, very close to them all the way through my life. And a couple of years ago he was diagnosed with cancer, and the kind of things he used to tell me kind of started hitting home. You know, he's always said the same thing to me. So there's a number on everything you do. So there's a number on how many games you're going to play in your life. There's a number, how many training sessions you'll complete, how many days you'll live. You know, everything has a number. So don't waste it and don't spend time being, you know, uptight about it. Enjoy it. Just enjoy every single one, because you never know when your last one is. And like I say, when he was diagnosed, that really kind of hit home what he'd always been telling me all these years. And that's really made me appreciate so much more every game that I get to play. And I enjoy them so much more now. And I look forward to them so much more. And I can also, for some reason, I can switch off easier after the game now, because, you know, yeah, it's terrible if you lose and all this kind of thing. But it could be a lot worse.
It's a fascinating perspective that you have. And actually, everything you say makes complete logical sense. So even what you just said there about the external validation, you know, the amount of people, and again, not just goalkeeping, in all walks of life, where they're looking for somebody to tell them they've done well, someone to give them confidence, whereas the realization that actually everything is within already, you know, you can create your own confidence if that's what you need to do in a particular moment. And similarly, I guess, when it comes to you and your performance, I mean, let's touch on that as an example. You mentioned social media. You know, are you somebody then to scroll through comments about yourself?
No,
not at all. Because this back to when I was, and it's the same thing, probably sounds like we've gone through a similar journey, where I remember even at Watford, I'd check the message boards. And this was back in the day when we didn't really even have Twitter or anything like that. But you'd check message boards. And I remember when I first did it, it was great because I was the kid coming into the team, and you could imagine it was really, really positive. Yeah. Then suddenly I remember we lost to West Ham. We were 2-0 up, lost 3-2, and I still decided to check. And my God, it's amazing how quickly everybody turned. So
but that's the thing. It's so easy just to post a comment. And like I say, nobody knows the process that you go through every single day to be where you are, the things you've done or the things you've sacrificed to be where you are. And for someone just to a throwaway comment about you, of course, as a youngster, you'll take that personally. But you realize that, you know, who cares? I don't care. You know, if someone doesn't like me, well, you know, all the best to you. That doesn't mean anything to me. I have a group of people whose opinion I value and whose opinion means a great deal to me. And those are the people that I turn to if I ever need anything like that. But again, it goes back to the homework. If I know, I know my profession, so I know when I've played well and I know when I haven't played well. I don't need anybody to tell me that. I don't need anyone to you know, pat me on the back if I've played a good game or not. You know, it's nice, but I don't need it. I know I've played a good game, you know, and the same with a bad game. I don't need anyone telling me. I don't need anyone come in to say, you know, keep your head up, mate, or anything like that. It doesn't, you know, I don't need it. It's something in my head that, well, it's part of life. It's part of football. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. And, you know, you just accept that. And you know, I know that the kind of stuff I do every day puts me in a position where I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I've done everything I could. I physically couldn't do any more. I couldn't work harder. I couldn't prepare more. I couldn't watch more, you know, film. I couldn't watch, you know, I couldn't really study anymore. So if you play bad, you play bad. Simple as.
Is that anything that you've ever experienced in your career, that narrative that kind of gets built up by the media?
Well, like I say, I've really been lucky that, you know, I had a dad that played the game and who could tell me these things that, you know, just don't read it. Don't listen, because people will have opinions of you. It's always going to happen, and they're entitled to their opinions. But find your group, find your board, and whose opinions you value, and take them. Because, like I say, you can be the best thing ever in one week and you can be the worst thing the next. And that, you know, being solid, steady, having games where nobody sees you doesn't sell papers. It doesn't sell, you know, there's no headlines in that. So obviously they need to create stories. They need to create traffic. They, you know, back in the day, they needed to sell papers. So they're going to sensationalize every great save and every mistake. Of course they are. That's just natural. And that's how that's how media works. But for me, ignorance is bliss. I just don't read it. You know, I know, like I say, when I've played well, and I know when I've played bad. And my manager and my teammates are the ones who are important to me. If they know that I am playing well, then that's all I need. I don't need anyone else's opinion on that. I would advise any other youngster, just don't read it, because it's easy to write something great about someone and it's easy to write something terrible about someone, you know, but find whoever you trust and stick to them.
do you know what, you gave a business analogy earlier, and I say this to some of the lads that I work with, almost have your own board of directors, you know, so your people.
I have a board meeting. I have a meeting with people genuinely about, you know, how everything's going, you know, because like I say, I value their opinion. So,
as in your close friends, you mean your close network, you sit down.
My close network. I have a close network of friends, but I also have, you know, former coaches that I still speak to a lot, and you know, people and former teammates and current teammates that whose opinions I value. I know that they know what they're talking about, and I know they'll also be honest. They'll be honest about, you know, what they think. So I don't need people, like I say, being yes men. You don't want yes men around you. You need the people who dare to, you know, to tell you when you're wrong, or to tell you when something, you know, if I was, you know, that'd be the worst message for me ever, was that, you know, you're not working hard enough, or you're slacking or something like that. So you need people that are going to tell you that. And in football, you know, it's very easy to surround yourself with people who are always going to tell you how great you are, but you're not always great. You're still a human, and you know, you're not some kind of superhero or superstar or anything like that. You know, you're still just yourself, and that keeps you grounded.
I'm assuming that the Between the Sticks podcast that we do every week, that's one of the resources that you refer to, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, like I said to you, I'm a goalkeeping nerd. I love listening about goalkeeping. I love listening about informed opinions about goalkeeping. And again, that, you know, I genuinely do see that as part of my education, you know, because my way of goalkeeping and my philosophy and idea of goalkeeping is not the be all and end all. It's not the finished article. I'm not the finished article. I never will be. So, like I said, there's always something I can learn. And, you know, someone like yourself, you know, you've been, you know, with the way you speak about goalkeeping, you can see that you study it, you observe, and you catch on to things. And there's not many people who do that. And if you haven't stood in that position yourself, it's very, very difficult to know what you go through in 90 minutes on the pitch. It's very, very difficult to know, for anybody who hasn't stood there, what it feels like to make a great save, or to make a terrible mistake, or to cost your team or something like that. Until you've been in that position, you really don't know. And, you know, I know you do your pundit's corner and things like that, which always makes me laugh. And you know, because when the times I do watch games, I'll tend to watch them on mute, because I just can't, because I know it'll infuriate me or something like that. But
well, do you know what? Yeah. I want to jump on this, because I was going to ask you. This was one of the questions I was really keen to ask you, because firstly, I'd love to see more ex-goalkeepers as pundits, and I could definitely see, you know, you're going to have so many different options as and when you do hang up the gloves, which I'm sure won't be for a long time yet. But as and when you do, I could see you going into a role like that, because again, even this conversation we're having now, where you can talk about it on the level that you can, and actually the messages that you give, look, on a broader scale, you know, I one of the big things for me is, yeah, we want to help in terms of goalkeepers and give a more balanced opinion, but also for kids that are coming through that might want to be goalkeepers, or just to help them with their mindset to be that little bit more confident, et cetera, et cetera. So to actually have that educated voice on that panel talking about goals that have been conceded, because everything you've just talked about there aligns with that. You know, you're saying, it's, if you haven't stood in the position, how can you necessarily pass judgment? And some of the judgments that are being passed, you almost can't blame some of the pundits, because it is part of their remit. They need to comment on the goal that's just gone in, yet they don't know what to say. And I almost feel sorry for them sometimes, but they'll of course have to go down the sensationalist route and either go, it's great or it's dreadful. They can't sit in the middle. So they're then passing comments sometimes, and often, obviously in our opinion, as you've heard on Commentary Corner, often that can be a little bit unfair on the goalkeeper, or they're not able to break down why a goalkeeper's done what he's done. I mean, is that something you may look to go into when you're done, or have you not even thought that far ahead?
No, I don't know. I think that in that sense, you know, you have incredibly now, you have referee pundits, you know, which staggers me in a way that you do, but it's because it's such a specialized position, but so is goalkeeping. So what needs to happen is there has to be a lot more research done And I know, for example, in American sports, particularly the NFL, they have production meetings up to games where, you know, they get to really quiz the players on what they're working on, what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve and go into the nitty gritty of what they're trying to do. Because you sacrifice your entire youth, your entire life to get into this position, and you work so hard. You know, you're in a hotel 4 days a week because you're playing constantly, you're away from your family, and for someone just to have a throwaway comment that judges you as a bad goalkeeper in just a throwaway comment is very disheartening. And like you say on your podcast, that as a young goalkeeper coming through, I'd be thinking, gee, I don't need that in my life. I could go and be a striker and miss 10 chances and score one goal and everything would be about me being a hero, you know. But like you say, they aren't educated in goalkeeping, so it is really hard for them. Of course it is. But what would frustrate me is when they try and break it down and they talk about, you know, things that are just nonsense, you know, things like getting beaten at your near post, like nonsense things where you're thinking, just stop saying all these cliche things. Just say, I'm not in a position to comment on that. I really don't know. Because otherwise it just becomes pointless, really. And it's just, like I say, a throwaway comment to something. And like I say, it would definitely, as a young keeper, it would be disheartening to hear these things from probably people who you idolize. You know, a lot of these people are you know, superstars, and you know, they'll be people you've grown up watching, and for them just to judge you from one performance is tough. And you know, like you say, I think the sensationalism about goalkeeping is quite incredible sometimes. You don't really get rewarded for just being consistent. You know, either you're amazing or you're terrible. You know, there's not really an in between. I think like I say, my best performances are the ones where nobody notices me, because those are the ones where I have been in perfect communication with my defense. Things haven't got through. You know, we've communicated that well that we've stopped threats before they even became chances. And those are the kind of things for me that need to be highlighted with goalkeeping performances is the synergy and the work between the defense, midfield and the goalkeeper, and it being a team effort. It's the same with stats. It's so difficult to put stats on goalkeeping because it's so subjective, you know, and things like clean sheets. I never look at clean sheets. They're it's a useless stat to me. You know, clean sheets give a basis to win games. Of course they do, but I can't tell you how many games we've been in complete dominance and complete control and been 2-3, 4-0 up, and someone gets like a lucky deflection or someone scores a great goal or something like that, and then you lose your clean sheet, and that's what you get judged on. So, you know, it is a really, really subjective and difficult position to evaluate, and you do need experts to do that. And experts are the ones who have stood there themselves and been in those situations and been under pressure and like I say, have been the hero and made the save and have been the villain and cost your team. You know, there's no way you can describe the feeling of making a mistake in the 90th minute after your team has run themselves into the ground to get a result and you're the one who costs them. Equally, the same thing, you know, if you're the one that saves them, that you can't know what that feels like until you've done it.
In that regard, then, Casper, with regards to the clean sheets, we spoke to Joe Hart about this actually a couple of years ago. Is the Golden Glove a thing for you then? If you were to win the Golden Glove at the end of the season, is that something you would proudly place on your mantelpiece, or would you just think that doesn't mean anything?
I mean, when you win things, you appreciate them. And take it as an example. The season we won the league, I think I had 15 clean sheets and Petr Cech had 15 as well at the time. And we were winning 3-0 at home against Everton in the last game of the season. Oh, second to last game of the season. And Morelos, I think it was, got, you know, the luckiest goal ever. And there goes my clean sheet. And then we go to the last game of the season, Chelsea away, and we're in complete control. And Jeff Schlupp gives away a penalty and they score and Petr Cech keeps his 16th and I don't. And then he wins it, you know, and it's one of them. It's, I think it's just a weird one to judge because yeah, it's something like that. We still win the game, but my clean sheet is gone. So I don't really place too much emphasis on it because, like I say, it doesn't give an accurate reflection, I don't think, of what's important in the sense. There's only one thing that's important. That's points. You know, that's the only thing that's important. But obviously, in this world that we live in, you know, stats are huge. Stats mean so many things. But I still think I'm still yet to see a stat that I think is something that I can use in terms of measuring a goalkeeper's ability.
Do you know that you're speaking my language? But the thing is, I don't know whether it can be created. Like you mentioned, you know, you touched on American sports. Something like baseball is a much simpler thing to, or a much simpler sport to create statistics for, you know, and because you're going to face that many pitches or whatever it might be. Of course, over time, it'll even itself out. You know, I see even on Sky Sports News now, they've got the things forever rolling, like the most saves in the league. Well, you know, it's nonsense. Of course, you know, Sam Johnson, who's having a very good season, but of course you can have the most saves because they are facing so many shots. Yeah, and similarly, exactly. He's conceded the most goals, which of course he would, again, based on... I just don't know how this changes, though, because again, it's the narrative that seems to surround every goalkeeper. And you made the great comment there about the fact that actually sometimes your best games are the games when you'll come off the pitch and someone will say to you, oh, you didn't have much to do today, or quite one today, when actually you know yourself, you've had to be so focused, your communication's on point, your positioning's on point, you've read the game well, through balls, etc., etc. And yet those are the games that people are going to say to you, like, oh, I've had nothing to do, quiet game.
Yeah.
You know, but then you look at each goalkeeper now in the Premier League and there is a narrative naturally that surrounds every single one. And then to break free of that is near impossible. And it's not based on anything factual. It's just based on opinions. And quite often, going back to what we were talking about earlier, not necessarily opinions of the experts of the game. It's just opinions that have grown and suddenly they become, oh, well, that goalkeeper is that. And it might be based on one or two bits of evidence that will back that up.
Yeah, and like I say, it's such a difficult thing to put goalkeepers in a box because every team requires something different off their goalkeeper, you know, and that, you know, you can really see it in the sense of Guardiola and what he needs from his keeper. City are incredible at suffocating the opposition because of Ederson, in my opinion. They can't play that way if they have a keeper who isn't as brave as Ederson in the sense of, you know, when I say bravery, it's decision-making, being brave to make a decision where if you get it fractionally wrong, you know, you are in line to be blamed. So the bravery he has in taking up the positions he does and then committing to them enables Manchester City to suffocate the opposition because they can counter-press so hard and win the ball back up the field because they know any ball over the top, they've got a keeper who's going to deal with that. And that's why, for me, he's the best in the league. That he, you know, what he's brought to Man City and their game has been so incredible because he can make them play in a way that very, very few teams can. But that's what's required from him in that team. And you can go through every single team and you can pick out different things that are required from that goalkeeper to play in that team. And that, I don't think there is a way of quantifying in terms of stats and numbers how good or bad a goalkeeper is, because again, there's one that's called errors leading to goals. Well, what's an error? Who's actually making that judgment, you know? And the same with save percentage. But okay, so if you have 10 shots in 5 games that are all just, you know, tricklers into your hands, that's a save. So your percentage is obviously going to be high. But you could also have 10 that are smashed in from 2 yards that you can do nothing about, and that will affect your save percentage. So I think it's really, really hard to quantify it. And like I say, that's why you probably need the educated opinions of former goalkeepers or current goalkeepers, for that matter, to help educate in the position of goalkeeping because it is so specialised.
Note for next podcast, by the way, Rich, scrap clean sheet club at the end of each between the sticks. It's just a bit of fun, Casper. It's just a bit of fun. Hey, honestly, it doesn't mean anything.
Hey, it's always nice to get clean sheets because, like I said, every single goal that goes in that every single goal I concede, I look at that and think, I should have saved that. Doesn't matter how it goes in or how it's scored, I will always think that. And I will always dissect it and look at it and think, I could have done that, I should have done that, this, that, the other. And of course, you can always dissect them like that. But clean sheets are nice when they happen. And you know, you'll get the recognition for that. It's not always what I think goalkeepers should get the recognition for. But you've got to take whatever recognition you can get, because it's not that forthcoming. It's the same with penalty saves. You know, if you save a penalty, sometimes it's just pure luck. You know, you just guess away and you go the right way and you save it. But you got to take the praise that you can get, because it's not always there on tap, is it?
On narrative, Casper, as well, and this is something that we've experienced, especially in the last couple of years in goalkeeping, since we've been doing the podcast. And, you know, I think of Chelsea as an example. We've spoken a lot about the narrative that was behind Kepa and the fact that he's almost been rammed into the ground from the media, it seems like. And then Edouard Mondi comes in and he's the greatest goalkeeper that Chelsea have had in years since Petr Cech. And then suddenly we're just starting to see that narrative shift again. Is that anything that you've ever experienced in your career, that narrative that kind of gets built up by the media?
Well, like I say, I've really been lucky that, you know, I had a dad that played the game and who could tell me these things that, you know, just don't read it. Don't listen, because people will have opinions of you. It's always going to happen, and they're entitled to their opinions. But find your group, find your board, and whose opinions you value, and take them. Because, like I say, you can be the best thing ever in one week and you can be the worst thing the next. And that, you know, being solid, steady, having games where nobody sees you doesn't sell papers. It doesn't sell, you know, there's no headlines in that. So obviously they need to create stories. They need to create traffic. They, you know, back in the day, they needed to sell papers. So they're going to sensationalize every great save and every mistake. Of course they are. That's just natural. And that's how that's how media works. But for me, ignorance is bliss. I just don't read it. You know, I know, like I say, when I've played well, and I know when I've played bad. And my manager and my teammates are the ones who are important to me. As if they know that I am playing well, then that's all I need. I don't need anyone else's opinion on that. And yeah, I would advise any other youngster, just don't read it, because it's easy to write something great about someone and it's easy to write something terrible about someone. But find whoever you trust and stick to them.
Do you know, in a lot of my studies, there was a lot about the idea of just being able to let go. And that might be an opinion, that might be something. Because you've just hit the nail on the head there in terms of what you allow into your mind is up to you. You know,
completely.
You know, conversations you're having with friends. Someone can tell you are something. Well, it doesn't mean you are. You've still got that option to choose whether you want to take on board what they're saying. And again, if it's coming from a trusted source, then more often than not, the advice is take it on board, or at least explore what it is that they're trying to say to you, because you would like to think they're doing it for the best intention, you know, whereas,
yeah.
And I guess this is it, right? You've got a social media profile as well. No doubt every time you put a post out, there'll be 1,000 comments within minutes. And again, you've got an opportunity or a choice as to whether you want to read them and take them in or not. And I guess that's certainly for a lot of the younger goalkeepers listening to this. That's probably one of my biggest bits of advice, and sounds like is yours also, is just be so careful as to the information you take in.
Of course. I mean, this world that we live in is so fast moving and things can change so quick. And there's so much information out there and so many different ways of getting that information that every time you pick your phone up, you have the opportunity to access any information about yourself if you're a footballer at any time and see what everybody's saying about you. But you've really got to be so careful, because like I say, it's so easy to get sucked into that and start trying to live your life after that and searching for that validation, you know, searching for those comments, oh, you're great, you're this, you're that, or oh, you're terrible. These things are for me, I control exactly what you say. I control the information going into my mind. You know, that's something I can control. I can't control what people think of me. You know, I just can't do that. There's no way I could do that. So control the controllable. That's so important for me. Social media was not around when I started playing. Again, showing my age here. And the only thing you ever had was maybe, you know, that I was playing League Two back then. So it was maybe a one paragraph write up in the paper. But even then, I thought, just don't read it. Just don't read it. Because what's it going to do for me? Is it going to help me? No, it's not. Do I get anything from doing it? No, I don't. So why waste my time? Why waste my energy? I've got enough stuff to be doing. Use that energy on something constructive. You know, use it for training. Use it for mental prep. Use it for all these different kind of things. And control what you can control.
One of the big things for me talking to you now, and I really get this impression and certainly the back and forth we've had over the last few days and just what I know about you, is the passion that you still have. And you made a comment earlier about how you can lose that. You know, you can lose that and it suddenly becomes, I don't think you use this term, but I would probably use this term, in that goalkeeper can suddenly become a job if you're taking things too seriously, or if you don't have anything else in your life, you don't have the balance and a way in which you can switch off. How have you managed to keep the passion and the enjoyment and still talking to you now, the way in which you're talking about, you know, still even now wanting to take your game to the next level? Have you got any advice for goalkeepers? We talk a lot about enjoyment, how important it is to enjoy the game, but you still have the passion even at your age. How have you maintained that?
Well, for me, it's always come down to love of the game. I absolutely love playing football and I love being in goal. And I've been so lucky with the teammates I've had, the groups of goalkeepers I've worked with, the people I've worked with. My first experience of it, you know, with Tim Flowers, he was, you know, not just an amazingly good coach who put on sessions that tested you and developed you and all that, but his humor was incredible, you know, and it was such a joy to train every single day, listening just to him and Nicky Weaver going back and forth with banter, you know, and you came away sometimes from sessions, just your cheeks so sore from laughing because they're so funny. And we have like at Leicester now, we have it's such a great relationship, and it's such an important part of my career has been my competition, you know. So take what we have at the moment with Danny Ward and Eldon, both number one goalkeepers, both top class goalkeepers. The amount of respect we have for each other is very, very evident, but the fun we have in training, you know, is so important. It's got to be fun. So when we actually do the work, that's where it's serious. But when it comes to the between the sets and things like that, got to keep it light. Got to keep it light, because football can be so serious sometimes, you know, and people's jobs are on the line. It, you know, people pay good money to come and watch the games. So it's a lot of pressure on you. So you have to find a way to release that pressure. And by laughing and by having fun and really enjoying the privileged position that you're in, you know, that's how I've kind of always dealt with it. And again, it comes down to the people you work with. Do you love working with those people? And having someone like Eldon and Wardy, you know, to spar with, you know, spar ideas off when it comes to goalkeeping, but also, you know, just banter in daily life and daily training is such an important thing. And that core, that team backing you up has been so important for me. And I always say it is the hardest position at a football club, is being a number two or number three goalkeeper, because there's only one of you that can play and the chances of you playing are very, very small. So to maintain the desire, the hunger, the professionalism, to support the guy who is playing is so, it's such a noble thing to do, I think. And it's something that I always try and make sure that every goalkeeper I've played with, if I'm not playing, you know, I want to back the guy up. I want to make sure that he knows you know, that I respect him, and I, you know, I'll do anything for him to perform, because that's what they've always done for me, you know. So being a good teammate like that is really, really important, and it comes from the respect that you have for each other, and that kind of spurs you on every day if you enjoy coming to work. Because there are times it can feel like work, you know. If you're in a rut where you're losing games, this, that, the other, it can feel heavy, it can feel hard. But if you enjoy the people you're working with, that passion is so much easier to stay ignited and to stay enthusiastic every single day. And, you know, we bounce off each other. You know, we've got, like I say, Eldon is, you know, he's going to hate me now. I'll say he's probably 42, but he's not. He's he's 36, but he's, you know, he's such a great example to me as well, in the way he works. 36 years old, first man in the gym every morning, you know, last man to leave, working his socks off every single day in training, giving advice to the youngsters, giving advice to me, you know, guiding me, supporting me, you know. And the same goes for Wardy. You know, that's such an important thing for me, that keeps my passion alive, because every day I go to work, I love it. You know, it's enjoyable. Stowley, our goalkeeper, got Mike Stowell, he puts on sessions that develop us, that test us, and he creates an environment that has such a good blend of the old school with the new school, and he's also puts a big emphasis on. You know, between the sets, we, you know, let's also enjoy this, because it's the best job in the world. It is the best job in the world. So we can easily get bogged down with criticism and this, that, and the other. But we're so privileged to have this job. So it would kind of be offensive not to enjoy it, really.
Best job in the world. I think that's a very nice way to come to the end of this podcast, Casper. And I'll let Rich ask his final question. But before he does that, I did say I wasn't going to touch on any aspects of your career, but I've just got one little one, because you've mentioned humour.
Go ahead.
You've mentioned humour and lightheartedness there. And I don't think I've heard you speak about this particular moment before, but I'm going to take you all the way back to 2006. It's Darlington against Bury, and it's Chris Brass. Were you in goal for that moment?
Oh, I was.
So, this was mad, right? I mean, he punted the ball against his own nose and it flew beyond you.
Yeah, it did. It absolutely cannoned past me.
Have I seen this? I don't know if I've seen this. You're going to have to send me a...
You'll definitely have seen this. This has been seen everywhere. Everyone's seen this. Luckily, it's so long ago, there was no HD, so you couldn't really see how who was in goal, really, but... It was, I felt for him. I mean, Brassy was, you know, such a good guy and such a hard worker. And it was actually a really important game. We were fighting relegation there. And we ended up winning the game 3-2, and we scored in the last minute. And it was really, really important. I think that meant that we only needed a draw on the last day, I think, or something like that. And it was really important because for a team like, I know now, obviously, they've gone out of business, but back then obviously that would also probably have meant them going out of business. So for Brassy to do that in that game was so unfortunate. I don't know if it's 100% true, but I kind of seem to remember that he actually broke his nose or something like that doing it. I'm not, don't quote me on that 100%, but it was one of the moments everyone will have seen it at some point. It'll have come up on a Christmas DVD, or it'll come up somewhere on social media, 100%.
Oh, I love it. Well, look, we are towards the end of the podcast, and no, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And certainly, you know, I hope that a lot of young goalkeepers do get the opportunity to listen to this, because I think it's going to inspire so many younger goalkeepers, certainly. But look, the last question, you may well know what's coming, but Casper Schmeichel, what has goalkeeping given you?
Everything. Goalkeeping has been... Yeah, it's been in my life since the day I was born. It was the first place I went after being born in a hospital was a football stadium. I didn't go home first, you know. I went, obviously I don't remember it, but there's a picture of me with my dad, who was obviously a goalkeeper. So from the moment I arrived on this planet, goalkeeping was in my life. goalkeeping is in my life. It always will be in my life. So yeah, goalkeeping has set the fundamentals for my life. So it's given me everything, 100%.
Kasper Schmeichel, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hazard looking to get on the end of that ball, and he's in here. Hazard! Good save by Schmeichel.
So I don't know whether it's because he is a Premier League goalkeeper, because his surname is Schmeichel, because he is a Premier League title winner, but sometimes you just feel like you're talking to someone who really has a presence, who really has an aura, an authority about him, and I really felt that.
But also he's so assured. You know, I think that he studies it to the depths that he does. He is effectively a goalkeeping geek, a goalkeeping nerd. You know, I think he admitted that himself. And because of that, he is so sure in what he's saying, but at the same time open to learning, which for me is crucial. And no, I loved it. You know, I said it beforehand, and I'll say it again now. For me, I think for any young goalkeeper, if you're listening in and you know a young goalkeeper, I'd certainly ask you to recommend this to them, because I've got no doubt they'll get a lot of value from this.
Yeah, I don't even think we need to elaborate too much on what he said, because he articulated himself so well when he was talking about his methods, his psychology. I think just a couple of very quick bits. One, the fact that he spoke to military people and business people, CEOs, just to expand his mindset, I thought was really interesting. And also after the podcast had finished recording, he did say, I didn't mention this on the pod, but in terms of psychology, I speak to an English psychologist, but I also speak to a Danish psychologist too, just to get different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, again, just incredibly open-minded, willing to learn. You know, and that was a big thing for me. A big theme that really stood out was the willingness to want to continue his learning and knowing that there is always another level. You know, it could be so easy for someone of his level and to have done what he's done to call it a day or just take his foot off the gas ever so slightly. But you could just sense that even now, with everything that he's achieved, he is more driven than ever. Again, fantastic role model.
He also now knows the word Kaizen.
He does indeed. I thought he might know that. I was a little bit disappointed. That was the one disappointment from the interview.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Keepers
away.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.